for anyone trying to really understand our planet, things like tracking crop changes or mapping wildfires or deforestation, raw satellite data is often just, well, it's a mess. It's cloudy. It's noisy. It's overwhelming. The promise of Earth observation is huge, right? This global view. But actually using it, getting clear insights, it's been this constant struggle. So today we're doing a deep dive into Tessera. Think of it as a system that doesn't just manage the data, it actually transforms it, makes it surprisingly clear, ready to use even. It's really changing what we can see and how fast, and frankly, who gets access to that vital information.
Exactly. Our mission today is basically to unpack Tessera. It's this innovative open source foundation model, and it's really transforming Earth observation. It takes all that super complex satellite data and makes it analysis ready. And surprisingly accessible, too, for really crucial ecological environmental applications. So we'll dig into the specific, tough challenges it overcomes and look at some pretty remarkable results it's already getting around the world.
Okay, and where are we getting our info for this deep dive? It comes from a detailed scientific paper. It's called Tessera, Temporal Embeddings of Surface Spectra for Earth Representation and Analysis. Got a brilliant team behind it, researchers from places like the University of Cambridge, D Climate Labs. It's just a goldmine of insights on how this model works and, its actual real-world impact. So if you're curious about how cutting-edge AI can finally help us cut through all that noise and see what's really happening on our planet, stay with us. All right, so Earth observation data, satellites. It's vital for the big stuff, right? Food security, biodiversity loss, climate change, even disaster response. We've got petabytes of it. Launch costs are dropping, so more is always coming. But from your side, what are the biggest headaches when you try to turn those raw signals into something, actionable?
Yeah, that's really the core problem. And it's got a few layers. First, like you said, just the sheer volume, petabytes. Information overload is real. Then you've got persistent data quality issues. Big barrier. Things like sensor noise, constant clouds. Seriously, clouds are everywhere, atmospheric effects, even just inconsistent timing of the satellite passes. Mm-hmm. All that makes the raw data incredibly hard to use effectively. Imagine trying to watch a forest grow when it's always cloudy. It's tough.
Right. And for AI specifically, there's this thing called the labeling bottleneck. You hear that a lot. Why is that such a hurdle here?
Oh, it absolutely is. A huge one. See, traditional machine learning, it needs tons of accurately labeled data to learn. But for Earth observation, that labeled data is super scarce. It's expensive and time-consuming to create. It really is like having this massive library, but no catalog telling you what's in the books. And another thing is a lot of the older methods, they composite images, maybe annually or seasonally, to try and deal with the noise and gaps, which helps a bit, but it throws away the crucial temporal signal, what scientists call phenology.
Phenology, that's like the timing of things.
Exactly. When leaves bud, when flowers bloom, when crops get harvested. That timing, that rhythm, tells you so much about an ecosystem. Losing that when information, that's a massive limitation if you want to really understand dynamic systems.
Okay, so that really sets the stage. How do we get meaningful, actionable stuff from this complex, cloudy, mostly unlabeled data without drowning in it? And I guess that's where Tessera comes in. You mentioned its core idea is these ready-to-use temporal embeddings. But hold on, lots of projects try to fix this. What makes temporal embeddings, this specific approach, stand out? Why is it different or maybe better?
What's really fascinating, I think, is that Tessera is built as a foundation model. So it's general purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Pre-trained on a massive amount of diverse Earth observation data. But the key is it uses self-supervised learning, SSL. And that's a game changer. It means the model learns from the patterns and structure that are already in the data itself. It doesn't need nearly as much of that scarce manually labeled data. It essentially teaches itself, which is a big shift from the old supervised ways.
That teaching itself idea sounds incredibly powerful. How does it do that? What kind of data does Tessera actually look at to learn?
It very cleverly combines two really potent types of satellite data. First, you've got the optical data from Sentinel-2 that gives you visible light, infrared, helps you see the Earth kind of like our eyes do. But second, and this is really crucial, it uses synthetic aperture radar, or SAR, specifically the backscatter data from Sentinel-1.
Ah, SAR, radar. That's the one that sees through clouds, isn't it? That must be huge.
Precisely. Radar is like Tessera's superpower against bad weather. It punches right through clouds, even some vegetation sometimes. It gives you this complementary all-weather view that optical sensors just can't manage. It's almost like giving the planet X-ray vision.
Okay, that cloud penetration is a massive advantage for keeping an eye on things continuously. So it takes these two streams, optical and radar. How does it merge them and then turn them into these temporal embeddings you talked about?
Right, so it takes these two data streams and processes them carefully into what the paper calls D-pixels. Think of a D-pixel as like a timeline for one specific 10-meter spot on Earth over a whole year. It carefully keeps track of how things change that vital temporal evolution.
Oh.
Then for the self-supervised training, Tesserae uses a modified Barlow twins loss function. This is a key technical bit. It basically teaches the model to create representations that are consistent, even if the input data is messy or incomplete. Like, imagine looking at the same place on two different days. Maybe one's cloudy, one's clear, or the satellite pass is slightly different.
Okay.
The Barlow twins setup helps Tesserae figure out, hey, these are just different views of the same thing.
It learns to kind of fill in the gaps mentally, making its embeddings robust. Invariant is the technical term to all that noise and missing data. It's a bit like how our brains make sense of the world from partial information.
So it learns the underlying reality, even with messy partial views. That's clever. And the end result of all this smart processing is what exactly? It's a compact 128-dimensional embedding, basically a string of 128 numbers that represents that pixel's entire year. And it does this for every 10-meter pixel globally.
Wow. Okay. And here's the kicker. You said these are ready to use. What does that mean practically?
That's the absolute best part. The real game changer. It means you don't have to fine-tune the massive Tesserae model yourself. You don't have to download and wrestle with petabytes of raw satellite data. You definitely don't need to be a coding genius. Tesserae outputs these global annual embedding maps. Like the 2024 map is out now. It's about 250 terabytes. These maps act like rich, pre-computed data layers. Anyone can potentially use them.
So it dramatically lowers the barrier to entry.
Hugely.
Yeah.
And it also helps with data privacy, because you're not uploading your own sensitive ground data to some giant model somewhere. You just use the embeddings.
Okay, so we've got the problem defined and Tesserae's really innovative solution laid out. Now, let's get to the payoff. How does all this sophisticated tech actually translate into real-world breakthroughs? Where does it make a difference?
Yeah, this is where it gets really exciting. The paper tested Tesserae rigorously across five very different, very critical tasks. The results, they're often state-of-the-art. These aren't just theoretical gains. These applications tackle some really pressing environmental and societal needs head on.
All right, let's tick through them. How about something fundamental like food security? Got an example there.
Perfect example. Crop type classification in Austria.
Yeah.
Think about needing to know quickly and accurately what crops are growing where across huge areas. It's vital for food security planning, resource management, but it's notoriously tricky. Different crops can look similar. Their timing varies. So they used Austria's Invicos dataset. It had 17 different crop types all consolidated. And Tesserae, it consistently outperformed the traditional methods like random forest classifiers on hand-picked features. It also did better than other leading foundation models like Google's satellite embedding and Presto.
Why? What did Tesserae's embeddings do better?
They created tighter clusters in the data, more distinct groups for each crop type, which means higher accuracy, especially when they had only a little bit of labeled data to train the final classifier. It really showed Tesserae's knack for picking up those subtle but crucial differences in crop timing the phenology.
That's impressive for farming insights. Okay, from Austrian fields, where does Tesserae take us next? What's another big impact area?
Let's go to the rainforests of Borneo. We're looking at canopy height estimation. Knowing how tall the trees are is absolutely critical for carbon accounting, right? And for spotting forest degradation, understanding biodiversity hotspots. But the existing global models, they often struggle, especially with really tall trees in dense tropical rainforests. They tend to underestimate. And of course, clouds are a constant problem.
The classic cloud issue.
Exactly. So in this test area in Danam Valley, Borneo, really tall, old-growth forest Tesserae, did significantly better. It achieved an R-squared of 0.66, which measures how well the model fits the data, and an error rate, RMSE, of about 8.9 meters. That was much better than the global models, which often just maxed out at lower heights and had big errors.
And the key was?
The fusion of Sentinel-1 radar and Sentinel-2 optical. That combo gave it the cloud-free, information-rich signal it needed, even in that challenging environment.
So seeing through the clouds really does make a difference for something as complex as a rainforest canopy. But what about measuring the actual stuff in the forest, the biomass?
Absolutely. That's the third application. Above ground forest biomass, or AGB, estimation. This time in Finland, measuring AGB is vital, monitoring deforestation carbon stocks. But going out and measuring trees on the ground, it's just too expensive and slow for large areas. Big data gap.
So we need remote sensing.
Precisely. They used the BioMasters benchmark dataset from Finland. Now, a classifier trained just on Tessera's embeddings. It almost matched the performance of the winner of the BioMasters competition.
Wow. And that winner?
That winning model was developed using supervised learning with tons of labels over 8 days of intense training. Tessera got almost the same result using just a tiny fraction of the training labels and in only about 5 hours of task-specific training.
That's hugely efficient.
It really highlights the label efficiency and, frankly, the computational frugality of Tessera. It also outperformed another model, SpectralGPT, and tied with Google satellite embeddings in this task. Shows its power across different forest types.
Amazing reduction in time and effort. Okay, moving on. Let's tackle one of the most visible, urgent challenges we face. Wildfires.
Yeah, a really critical one. Application 4, burned area detection in California. Wildfires are getting worse, we all know that. So getting accurate, fast maps of where the fire burned and how badly it burned, that's crucial for response, for recovery planning. But again, optical sensors struggle with clouds, smoke.
Yeah.
And the traditional methods often need a lot of manual tweaking.
So how did Tessera do?
They looked at 215 by 15 km areas in California hit by the 2020 wildfires. Tessera's embeddings showed really clear separation between burned and unburned pixels. And interestingly, when they visualized the embeddings using UMP, that's a way to see high-dimensional data in 2D.
Right, you mentioned that.
You could actually see a smooth gradient within the burned areas that lined up with burn severity, low, moderate, high. Pretty cool. Performance-wise, it hit an F1 score over 0.96, which is excellent. But here's the kicker. It got over 90% of that top performance using only 0.01% of the training labels.
0.01%. How many pixels is that?
It's tiny. Like around 330 labeled pixels. That's it.
That is astonishing data efficiency.
It really shows the power of having that multimodal input, especially the radar cutting through smoke and haze, and the strength of the self-supervised pre-training.
Incredible. Okay, one last application area.
Right, the fifth one takes us into the world of voluntary carbon markets, looking at projects in Brazil. So in these markets, projects need ways to estimate how much carbon they're sequestering between the expensive, infrequent ground checks. They often use what are called stocking indices. These are basically remote sensing metrics that correlate well with above-ground biomass. They give you a reliable proxy.
Okay, makes sense.
So they created a stocking index using Tessera embeddings combined with height data from NASA's GV sensor. And they compared it against actual ground measurements from 38 agroforestry sites in Brazil. Tessera's index consistently outperformed 5 other widely used global canopy height and biomass products.
So better than the standard tools.
Yeah, significantly better in this context. It really showcases how Tessera's high-quality embeddings can be used for these very practical, impactful applications that support climate finance mechanisms. Seeing that work so well, seeing how the model resolved these complex views into something so useful, that was definitely an aha moment.
Okay, this all sounds like a massive leap forward technologically. Powerful stuff. But the practical question always comes up. Who is this actually for? Is it just for big tech firms or elite researchers? Or can others realistically use this?
That's a fantastic question, and it's actually something the developers really prioritized. Accessibility. Tessera is explicitly designed to be accessible. First off, it's open source. And they've created the GeoTessera Python library. It makes it easy, even for people who aren't deep coding specialists, to download and use the embeddings.
So you don't need a supercomputer cluster?
Absolutely not. You don't need access to massive high-performance computing to benefit. That core design choice, providing these pre-computed, ready-to-use embeddings, just removes a huge historical barrier for using satellite data effectively.
That really is a game changer. I can picture like a conservation group using a simple web tool. They define an area, pull down the Tessera embeddings, maybe click on a few spots they know are forest, wetland, whatever, and boom, they get a high-res habitat map almost instantly. Is that feasible?
That's exactly the kind of application it enables. Rapid, human-in-the-loop environmental analysis. Your local knowledge guides the AI without you needing to understand the complex model underneath. And another key technical point for accessibility. The performance stays robust even when they compress the embeddings using 8-bit integer quantization.
Meaning
they can shrink the data size by 4 times with almost no loss in quality. That makes storing and using these global high-resolution data sets genuinely practical, not just theoretically possible. It truly helps democratize access to these advanced Earth observation insights. It's not just for the institutions with massive servers anymore.
Okay, so let's wrap up this deep dive into Tessera. What are the main takeaways? We've definitely seen this innovative foundation model. It takes that incredibly complex, often messy satellite data clouds, noise, the lack of labels problem, and it somehow distills it down into these highly informative but also easy to use temporal embeddings.
Right, and its ability to cleverly fuse optical and radar data. It's huge. Plus, learning from the data itself using self-supervision and, crucially, preserving those temporal signals, the timing of events. That's what lets it achieve really state-of-the-art performance across such a wide range of critical tasks, you know, from tracking crops, estimating forest carbon, spotting wildfires, informing carbon markets. It's versatile, it's robust, and it delivers real-world value.
It genuinely seems to be transforming how we monitor our planet, offering this open source, super efficient, and remarkably accurate shortcut. A shortcut to being truly well informed about Earth's incredibly dynamic systems. It's not just about getting more data dumped on us, it's about getting smarter, more accessible insights much faster than before. So here's a final thought to leave you with. Given Tessera's power to pull such rich, ready-to-use information from these vast, unlabeled satellite archives and do it so efficiently, how might that fundamentally change the way we approach environmental policy, resource management, even things like disaster response in the next decade? What new questions could you start asking? What new insights could you unlock with a tool like this becoming available?